This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And the mail's picking up after a little bit of a New Year's lull. We're starting to get lots of questions at radio program at AOL.com. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
And, you know, should we have new listeners? Layla, you know, introduce yourself. You are a...
I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I practice with you, Dr. Hoffman, on a daily basis here in Manhattan. I have a master's degree in nutrition and exercise.
How long have you been doing this?
Oh, since 2004.
2004, so that would make 16 years.
Yeah.
And your initial training was, you had the good fortune to work with?
With Dr. Robert Atkins.
Yeah.
Yes, at the time.
Okay. This is one of the reasons I like working with you, because you really get it about low-carb nutrition and
right.
its benefits.
Right, right. And this whole, the whole integrative functional medicine, integrative nutrition arena, that's where I started and that's where I stay.
Right.
As opposed to
and
the...
Unlike some people who started in conventional nutrition and became disillusioned with it, I guess you were mm-hmm. interested in doing
yes.
A functional medicine,
yeah.
holistic, integrative,
right.
complementary, call it what you will.
Right. Complementary at the time.
Right.
Yeah. So...
All right. So before we get to questions, mm-hmm. radio program at AOL dot... Radio...
radio program.
Program at AOL.com yes. is the destination for questions. We've got some information about something that I talked about, and I just kind of spun it off my head. I said, you know, mm-hmm. we get a lot of questions from people who have stasis in their GI tracts.
Yeah.
They have what's been termed gastroparesis. They mm-hmm. can't empty their stomachs. They have a real slowdown in their digestion.
Yeah.
And, you know, for these people, life is really horrible. And, you know, frankly, it's not just about diet.
Yeah.
High fiber diet or diet modification can help, but they mm-hmm. actually have almost a lazy GI
yes.
tract.
Yes. Unstimulated GI tract.
Right.
So it's not about the fiber and all that.
Right. So we talked about, and I just threw this out there, I said, I bet you that eventually they mm-hmm. will have pacemakers for the gastrointestinal tract.
That's right. And that's what you said.
Just like because they have uh-huh. heart pacemakers, you know, if your heart's slowing down,
yeah.
you can pace it. But the gastrointestinal tract is much more complicated. But here's an update on that from this month, January 2020, which was reported on from the Esophageal and Swallowing Center in Cleveland.
Mm.
Transcutaneous VNS, vagal nerve stimulation,
mm-hmm.
is a promising non-invasive technique with the potential to improve both subjective and objective clinical outcomes in patients with gastroparesis. The researchers presented their findings at the annual meeting of the North American Neuromodulation Society.
Wow.
And they show a device, and it's a little bit like... it's kind of a zapper.
yeah.
That you here's a picture.
And yeah.
So
yeah.
You apply it to your neck.
Neck. Uh huh.
And it's called the GammaCore handheld vagal nerve stimulator. It's mm-hmm. FDA cleared and marketed for the treatment of migraine and cluster headaches.
Wow.
You know the vagus nerve is such a has
yes.
so many universal impacts.
Mm-hmm.
They say. And obviously, you know, when you have migraines, you often have a GI component.
Yes. You know, it's like at the same time that you have the headache, you also feel like you can't digest anything. Your food is stuck. Mm-hmm. So the vagus nerve obviously has some impact. And I don't think that they've got it nailed down yet, but I really predict that they're going to make a lot of progress in this. They're going to, you know, they already have something that they can market. They're going to refine the techniques. Mm-hmm. Some of these devices will be implantable.
Wow.
Which means they can just put them inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be maybe with a little mini computer in it to decide when the impulses should be delivered and what sequence and what frequency, blah, blah, blah.
It's so interesting because that pretty much provides a vibration, if you will, that can be beneficial. Somewhere I've also read that humming
right.
properly, listen, proper
so
humming
is different.
So if you can't
afford the $4,000 for this
exactly.
device,
exactly, you might
hum.
Practice or hum a tune. When you hum,
how
your
about
lips
joining
are,
a choir? Maybe that
join could. A choir. Your lips are closed,
right.
but your teeth are apart.
Uh-huh.
They're not closed together.
Uh-huh.
And that I think that helps the vibration carry through. And I wonder, like okay. oftentimes you will speak and I'll answer in a like that.
And what you're doing is you're stimulating.
I'm humming.
You're stimulating.
I'm stimulating my vagus
digestive
nerve,
tract.
My digestive tract.
Right. Okay, so on it and. Of interest, this is, I'm reading from GastroEndo News.
Yeah.
This is a headline that caught my attention, and I'm not saying it's the answer, but headline, sounds good. Potentially revolutionary drug for celiac disease shows promise in phase 2 study.
Mm-hmm.
First of its kind drug, significantly dampened the immune activation, reduced the intestinal damage that people with celiac disease experience in response to gluten. Is this drug going to be the ultimate eat your cake and have it? Drug,
yeah.
You know, it's like, don't worry about diet, just it's an IV infused agent. I'm not sure I like that. It consists of gliadin containing nanoparticles that diminish the immune activation that people with celiac disease experience. They gave IVs to people, 34 men and women with well-controlled celiac disease. And then they were off gluten. They did this to prevent problems when they were then challenged with 2 weeks of gluten challenge. That doesn't sound good. 12 grams of gluten per day.
Oy.
For 3 days.
Okay.
would you sign up for that study if you had celiac
disease? No, not if I had celiac disease. No, absolutely not.
They said, you know, eat bagels, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They said they had a reduced gliadin immune response. Yeah, I don't know how practical these therapies are because they're expensive, high-tech.
Yeah.
And the solution.
It's immunosuppressant, again, like your yeah. Humira and your those.
I mean, the idea, I think, beyond this, is not so much it's really severely immunosuppressant, but it's tolerizing. It's a gliadin-based challenge that introduces the gliadin in a way that maybe talks to the immune system, that calms the immune system's reaction. But I don't think it completely dampens the immune system reaction.
Yeah.
So
that maybe you feel it less,
yeah.
But it's kind of like having a low-grade fever
yeah.
if you're somebody with celiac and you're going to continue to eat gluten.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the best
that
idea.
I agree with a high-tech medical solution for a problem which is dietary
yeah.
and can be alleviated with a diet modification.
Right.
But
agree, yeah.
There you have it, anyway. Mm-hmm. For what it's worth. So let's get to questions.
Okay. We've got one from Sal. Tell me about, please, supplements and medications to avoid before surgery. This is a great question. And
yeah.
one we even get.
Okay. So yeah. I will tell you traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I can even go to a website of a major yeah. hospital like Cleveland Clinic or something like that. And they'll tell you to avoid certain supplements.
Mm-hmm. Typically the blood-thinning
variety.
Supplements.
But what they exactly. do is they go very over the top in terms of that.
Mm.
They say that you should avoid fish oil because it's a blood thinner. You know, and they say to avoid vitamin E.
Yeah.
Traditionally. And they'll say
high amounts of it may
avoid,
be like a blood thinner.
Ginkgo biloba. They even say sometimes avoid curcumin because they believe that
yeah.
curcumin's a bit of a blood thinner.
Yeah.
And on and on and on it goes. Anything of any others?
You mentioned ginkgo. Sometimes even, those would be it. And possibly if you were taking a flax oil supplement, not flax seed, But a flax oil supplement.
Okay, so I'm going to look at. I'm just going to look at the recommendations from Mayo Clinic. I'm just dialing that up. Should a few commonly taken herbal supplements to avoid are ginkgo biloba, garlic, ginseng, ginger, dong quai, ephedra. Well, ephedra is off the market anyway.
Ginger,
feverfew, St. John's wort. You know, feverfew and St. John's wort, not because they're blood thinners, but because they may interact with medications.
Yeah, St. John's wort is a big one.
Omega-3 fatty acids. Now, here's the problem.
Yeah.
They just did a study which showed not only does fish oil not increase surgical bleeding, but actually somewhat decreases the risk of surgical bleeding. While it does inhibit platelets, you know, one of the big problems after surgery is in big surgeries, they give you a blood thinner right after surgery because you're more likely to get blood clots.
Yes.
So that's a very devastating complication of surgery. That's one of the reasons why they want to get you up and around. But when I had my, when I broke my hip, they came and they gave me an injection in my stomach. It was heparin because like, you know, on the surface of the skin, like a diabetic gets a little skin pop under the surface. They administered the heparin so that I wouldn't, lying in bed after surgery, get a blood clot in my leg. You know, years and years ago that when I broke my hip. Is this warranted? I mean, I think it's another example of the default is, oh my God, you're taking these supplements?
Stop!
Yeah, we don't know, we don't know what these things do. But if you study them, really, and look at, you know, the reports that ginkgo may cause bleeding, very anecdotal.
Yes.
Curcumin, very marginal that this is like a problem. And besides, a lot of problems can be alleviated by taking them. After surgery, there's a lot of inflammation.
That's true.
Fish oil will damp that down.
Curcumin will damp that down.
Curcumin will damp that down.
Systemic enzymes would be
helpful. Plus, there's certainly, that's a good thing to take post-surgery.
Yeah.
Many plastic and cosmetic surgeons tell their patients to take something like Wolbe enzyme or bromelain with proteolytic enzymes to reduce swelling and to facilitate healing. Zinc certainly is very important post-surgery. Vitamin C.
Yes.
You know, these are things that help with repair. You know, so
aspirin, if anybody's on a baby aspirin therapy, whether it's prescribed by their doctor or self-prescribed.
That's a serious blood thing.
Yeah, that's a serious blood thing.
Right.
Sal, what you want to do is stop taking these particular things at least a week before your surgery.
Well, but we
maybe two.
I think we have the supplements for surgery article on our website at drhoffman.com.
We do.
You just
go to drhoffman.com, put it in the search.
Supplements for surgery.
And it will be there as well. As well as things to start after surgery that are beneficial.
Right, things that,
for healing.
Like a healing protocol, because you really do need that extra.
C, vitamin C.
Some of those repair substances in greater amounts.
Yeah.
I mean, a high percentage of patients who are sick in hospitals, it's been found, have scurvy.
Ah.
They actually, not only do they have inadequate vitamin C, they actually have scurvy. And what is a characteristic of scurvy is poor wound healing. And what's also characteristic of zinc deficiency is poor wound healing. And many patients who are sick and require surgery, they don't have good digestion, they're poor diets, they've lost their appetite. Many are vitamin C and zinc deficient. So I would argue, you know, before surgery, get a complete panel, nutritional panel, and see what you need so that we can supplement the very things that will limit your recovery potential.
Right. Excellent idea. So, Sal, thank you very much for that question.
We call it prehab.
Prehab, you know, right.
You know, after surgery, they do rehab, but we should do prehab.
Yeah, pre-op.
By getting patients to lose weight, not starve themselves, not become nutritionally deficient, and stop smoking and, you know, eat a good diet.
Right.
And also
eating
exercise.
A nutrient-dense diet, all of that. Getting adequate amounts of sleep. You want to make sure your immune system is in the best shape. And your repair processes will be in the best possible shape.
Some exercise for cardiorespiratory fitness.
All of that.
Then you can fly through surgery and not have complications. There was an article in, I believe it was in either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, I don't remember which, but it was a good article. It was basically stating that there's no such thing as a minor surgery, especially when you're older, is that, you know, high single digits of people who have, quote, routine surgery have complications.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes what that argues for is like, if you're like, if you're 85, I mean, do you really need that knee replacement or hip replacement? Because, you know, it,
if you're a marathoner, maybe.
if you are, you know, but if you are, especially if you're in a little bit precarious health, these little surgeries can set, you know, it's like, the expression, the operation was a success, but the patient died.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like, technically the surgery was perfectly done and everything was fine, but, you know, one thing led to another and the patient, you know, ended up on a downhill course, and you can come in robust health and end up coming out
debilitated,
you know, knocked
disabled.
Down.
Yeah.
And especially we don't have that much reserve as you're older. So that's what that article pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. We have a question from Brandy. This is very sad. Brandy says, my daughter was in a terrible carjacking 3 years ago. She had just turned 16. Very traumatic for a young girl, and since then her life has been an on and off struggle. She's very high functioning, very strong girl, but it's been hard. Brandy is desperate for some intelligent medicine advice. After the carjacking, she started getting constant sinus infections, and then mood swings started. Talk therapy was in place, but no medication. She seemed to be getting over it, getting through it. Except for this summer, she had two big anxiety attacks. And so she was taken to the ER. They thought maybe it was meningitis. It was quite a disturbing anxiety attack. Everything was negative, but her headaches got worse. A week later, a family doctor put her on Lexapro for anxiety. Okay. So she felt great. She was relieved. Went away to college. Another possibly traumatic experience. And then within 3 months, went into her first hypomania. They said it was induced by Lexapro. No sleep. Crazy energy, happy, happy, happy.
Right.
So now she was diagnosed with bipolar.
Bipolar disease.
And is now on Abilify. This is pretty sad. This was a very strong, happy young woman who had a terrible thing happen.
Right. So
top of it, she went away to college, which can also be
There's a lot of things.
Traumatic in a different way.
This is a very moving target. You know,
it
people
is.
Are
yeah.
in a stage of emotional and psychological maturation in their teens, and things change. It's not an uncommon time for an emotional or psychiatric disorder to emerge, like schizophrenia or bipolar disease. It's complicated by the fact that there was probably, we should see this through the lens of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, where there was a very traumatic event. Then we have the dislocation of going to college, where who knows what goes on there, what type of circadian rhythm is being followed, which can exacerbate
And just simply being
bipolar.
Away from home, exacerbating the whole experience.
And dietary factors that are very marginal for freshmen in college. You know, we see this a lot. It's like kids who go to college and they come back and they're kaput. You know, they're like just, you know, and they have to kind of put themselves back together because the eating is horrible.
Yeah.
Go to drugs, the alcohol, whatever, you know, stuff happens.
Sure.
And sometimes it's not fully broached with the parents. Even the possibility of sexual assault, you know, that can occur. The girls are vulnerable too. And, you know, let's not be sexist about it. Boys as well. That there's a lot going on, you know, psychosocially and logistically, you know, in terms of what that does to the brain. So, you know, we would want to take a holistic approach to that. We want to say, you know, what are the nutritional deficiencies? What are...
Absolutely magnesium.
Yeah.
And omega-3s and B vitamins.
Yes.
Those need to be given immediately to somebody in that kind of shape, because those things will be depleted.
It's granted. It's for sure. And, you know, there's... you know, maybe a role for the Abilify. I'm not inalterably opposed to that, but it's a powerful medication.
The Lexapro, which was initially given.
But I guess that's off. They took that off because that was promoting, that was promoting too much serotonin.
Right. And it's, a lot of these medications in a teenager is more problematic than a full-grown adult.
That's the other thing, is that they have sort of virtually extended the prescribing of adult medications to children and adolescents. And the testing is done in adults. And there's really an extrapolation when they put younger people with different brains and different requirements on these medications.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did recently is I read a book called Medical Nihilism.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. in that book, it's a wonderful book. It's a little sometimes hard to wade through because it's very technical and it's written for, you know, professionals. But mm-hmm. it's one of the things they enumerate is that the evidence for antidepressants mm-hmm. for children,
yeah.
where it's widely prescribed, is virtually nil.
Mm.
Is when you really look at it and critically evaluate the statistics and the look at the actual studies, the studies have marginal significance. And so the approval yeah. was very controversial. It's like, I think they looked at 19 studies and they said that 2 studies were positive, and on the basis of those 2 studies, they approved the use of these medications for
There's
kids.
A lot of that bias.
And, you know, mm-hmm. so...
Which is unfortunate.
So that's not really robust evidence that they're helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have a kid who's an extremis, and that's the tool they have, and they're going to prescribe medication.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, there's a lot going on. Is there, you know, is nutrition the end-all and be-all of psychiatric disorders? I don't think so. But is it a big
component?
It's a place
to start, yeah.
You know, the microbiome effect on the brain, we know.
Right.
But
physiology, your adrenal health, your
yeah.
blood sugar,
yeah.
all of that plays the part physiologically in whether you're going to feel well and deal with any kind of trauma, PTSD, or otherwise, or other diagnosed psychiatric condition, or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be experiencing anxiety, but if your anxiety is caused by your adrenals being overstressed, depleted, that wired but tired, or your blood sugar mm-hmm. being too low, if you fix that, you may feel the anxiety less, or at least be able, if you take care of mm-hmm. the physiological aspect of that anxiety, you can wrap your head around the psychological
right.
component and maybe be able to deal with that better.
And if the diagnosis of bipolar is correct, generally studies show that very high dose fish oil is helpful for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some good research on specifically fish oil
yeah.
for bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the way kids eat, they probably get minimal omega-3s.
Absolutely.
I know I did when I was that age. You know.
We all did, right? Yeah. You know, the omega-3s making the neurotransmitters be able to fire better between your neurons because you know, they're fluid in their membrane with the omega-3s.
Another
not
way
stiff
to look at this is
with the wrong
how
fats.
Come more kids don't end up messed up? I really feel that adolescence, especially now, is an obstacle course for kids psychologically because, you know, between the, you know, all the psychological stresses And the
social media stresses.
And the social media stresses, but also the dietary challenges
oh, yeah.
that these kids undergo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the use of intoxicants. I mean, frankly,
yeah.
a lot of kids are smoking pot and they're using a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
And worse, you know, a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I certainly went through that kind of obstacle course when I was, you know, in not so much in high school, but in college.
Yeah.
And, yeah. you know, when I get together with my now successful college colleagues, we sometimes get every couple of years, we get together and have a big dinner.
Uh-huh.
It's like we go, how are we like doctors, lawyers,
uh-huh.
You know, executives?
Uh-huh.
How the hell did we survive it? It was like, whoa.
You did. You did. Oh, my goodness. So, Brandy, a good place for your daughter to start is to check for deficiencies, number one. Get on a very clean diet. Practice extreme self-care to start with. Make sure you're getting plenty of sleep, eating good, nourishing food. These are the places to start,
mm-hmm.
to take extreme, good, nurturing care, feeding yourself well, and then you take it from there.
Yep, and it's a long process of recovery and maturation. And
oh,
frankly, people in their 20s are a lot more distressed than people who are older and have sort of figured it out. You know, people in their 40s,
yeah.
50s, and 60s have a more regular routine. They kind of figure out what their bodies need
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. don't abuse their bodies as much. They're a little bit more
yeah.
settled in routines that match their body's requirements.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brandy, best of luck to your daughter.
Okay, good wow. point at which to pause because we divide our podcast into 2 parts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Layla, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part 2.
Should I take a probiotic? What are the chances that the acid in my stomach will deem it useless?
Okay, very good question. We'll tackle that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be back in just a moment for part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.